Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ. Welcome back. That's about what we thought it would be, right?
Yeah. A little longer, maybe, than we thought it was going to be. It's in fact, the question and answer period is still going.
So they're waiving interest on federal student loans. Mm-hmm. They are, after the declaration of national emergency, it frees up, what, $50 billion in available funds?
Yep. And there's also going to be a move toward drive-by testing.
Yep.
And for if you've been following close attention to what's been going on with a response to this, you know that there is already that kind of drive-by testing going on in New Rochelle, New York, which is the one spot in Westchester County just north of New York City where they've had a what the president referred to as a hot spot with a bunch of people that have tested positive already, all revolving around one lawyer who had met with apparently a lot of people in town and has infected many of them. And so they're doing that drive-by testing in New Rochelle as we speak. That's going to now be a national effort.
So coming up in just a few minutes, there is actually a local company out of Lee's Summit, and they are processing these tests. And I saw this on Channel 9 last night. I think they said they have the ability to move about 1,200 tests per day. And the result is, you know, not days or weeks. The result, I believe he said, was a couple of hours. And the president of that company is going to call in here in just a bit and tell us, what does this look like? I mean, they don't want you wandering into their office asking for a test, but how are they collecting the tests? How will we be able to do more of these to help stem the tide of what's happening here?
And on the national scale, that website that they're talking about rolling out will have a lot of that information. And it looks like that's where the triage is going to be done for this, to try to figure out if you're eligible to get a test. You're going to have to go to the website and run down that list of that sort of flow chart that they have built up there. And if you answer yes, 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 that's when you get into the line for testing.
So there's a lot coming at us today. We're going to get to all of it. But just in the interim, I have a girlfriend I just reached out to, and she is stranded right now in Miami. And
what,
I know
what
you're,
a place to be stranded.
You're all saying boo. Who she's stranded in Miami, but there are wider implications here, okay? So a listener reaches out to us, and I'm going to have Mark Lavoie come in, and she said, hey, my sister-in-law is stuck in Miami right now. I think you know her. Well, she's absolutely, I know her. She's a friend of mine. And I reached out to her on Facebook, and I said, are you stranded in Miami? Why are you stranded in Miami? Sure enough, she is, and Mark Lavoie, tell us why.
Yeah, they have friends in a little country called Suriname, half a million people population. They have a friend there. That friend called last night at 9:30 and said, oh, we've got like a new regulation here. Nobody can come in from the U.S. unless they're in self-quarantine for 2 weeks. And if they show any symptoms during that 2 weeks, then they're in like regulated quarantine. And they were only going to be there for a week. So they said, I guess we're not going to Suriname.
So thus they're stuck in Miami trying to figure out, okay, what, is there somewhere we can just stay down here and enjoy Miami?
Which but is not that easy.
This has not been reported. And one of the questions I have, because this is so new, is this all of South America saying don't come in? Or is this town that I'm going to be honest, I had never heard of. I thought it was Suriname. I'm like, Suriname? What's Suriname? Yeah. You have a surname? Well, it's Suriname?
The Suriname, and it was a Dutch colony.
Okay.
If you've ever watched Papillon, it's right next to Guyana.
It used to be called Dutch Guyana, did it not?
I believe years it ago. Was, yes.
What are you, the geography bee champ? What the hell, Grayson?
He's like Jeopardy champ, yeah.
So she gets there, and it's she and her husband, I assume, and a couple of the kids?
Three kids, college, high school, and middle school. And two grown-ups. And they were like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have some fun here on the beach. Well, look at all the people who had cruises this week or going to Mexico this week, going to the Bahamas or wherever. And, of course, your leaping off point is Florida. So all those people who couldn't go, they've booked up all the beach hotels and all that kind of stuff. So they're figuring it out. They're going to make, as she put it, we're going to try to make lemonade out of lemons. And she's got a good attitude about it. They've lived overseas. They've done a lot of traveling. They know what they're doing. But even for them, it's a challenge.
How do they feel about Cuban food?
Right.
Is Cuba going to let anybody in?
No, I'm just saying. There's a lot of good Cuban food in Miami.
Oh, yeah, of course, they got those great sandwiches, right? Yeah.
It does beg the wider question because we're right in the middle of this. Personally, I'm right in the middle of this.
Yeah.
People are nervous, not necessarily about coronavirus. They're nervous about going on vacation during spring break week and getting stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Getting stuck. And she thankfully is stuck in Miami. That's okay. They can come back. Yeah. She's probably, is she out the money? Did she say? Do they know?
It looks like they probably are. They might get some kind of credit back from the airline, but they're not getting a check.
For the next time you want to swing into Suriname or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I mean, and they got no notice on this. I mean, it was hours worth of notice.
It was 9:30 last night, and the way they got notice was their friend down there said, hey, just to let you know, on the news, it says such and such. And
well,
so
they should probably let people in the United States know that.
You would think, but the thing is, how many people go to Suriname?
Well, but that's my question. Is it Suriname or is it South America?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an excellent question. As far as we know at this point, it's just Suriname, but all the countries are going to make their own rules.
But you got to remember, Suriname is a country of 500,000 people.
Yeah.
Those little teeny tiny countries tend to follow the trend rather than set the trend.
Right, right.
And especially since Brazil, way to their south, just had to... You know, their president, they had a scare, but, you know, one of the president's, you know, close advisors or the press secretary, whoever he was, he has the virus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of countries down there are being just as cautious as we are up here.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the president of the company that now says they can start testing on a much wider scale than we've seen up to this point. How does that testing work? Where can you get it? When can you get it? We will answer those questions straight ahead, and then we will get back to the spring break conversation in the 4 o'clock hour. It affects a lot of people. You are listening to Dana and Parks.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
All right, welcome back to Dana Parks. Scott's in Mexico for now.
Yeah.
John Grayson's in studio with me here. Sam Stevie's on the other side of the glass.
And that's not a coronavirus thing. That just means they haven't thrown him out yet.
Yeah, you know, it's early. So I saw this on my husband's station last night. There is a company in Lee's Summit called Viracor Eurofins, which is headquartered in Lee's Summit. And they just announced they are offering a nationwide coronavirus test. And they are a global commercial lab, and they are expected to be able to ramp up testing in the near future from, I think I saw last night, they can run somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 tests per day. And so we are thrilled that Steve Kleibacher, the vice president of research and development for the company, is able to join us for a few minutes here on KMBZ. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon.
Well, so many people have so many questions about testing. Tell me how this process is going to work.
Right. So testing really does start with the physician. So patients who have the respiratory signs and potentially coronavirus should go see their physician. That physician will make a decision whether they are candidates for the disease or not. And if they are, then they'll collect a specimen, a sample, put it in a test tube, and send it to our laboratory or another laboratory. There's quite a few labs out there doing testing right now. The ramp up is pretty significant. We'll put the sample through a series of steps in our lab, and essentially we'll do a molecular analysis to look for viral RNA or nucleic acid, and by that process determine if the virus was present or not in that specimen that came from the sick patient.
When you're dealing with something like this, it's a brand new virus on the scene. How do you know what RNA to tell your test to look for? How long does it take to develop that process that it knows what to sniff out?
That's a great question. So it in the very earliest days of this epidemic, when the virus was still restricted to China, nucleotide sequence information or the genetic sequence of the virus was actually posted online. And so people could see that. It's remarkable. We get that information within a few days. Labs like ours, with the expertise that we have, can then do the analysis of that sequence and determine what tests might be candidates for good diagnostic tests or good detection. So we followed that information in the early days of the outbreak. Of course, we didn't know if it was going to ever leave China at that point or any country of origin. They start small, and then some die quickly, and others expand to the huge problem we have today. But we began developing tests and looking at different ways to approach the specific reagents or molecules that we use for the detection in our lab. And then, as it became clear that we would need a test, we started putting that test through a series of validation steps to ensure that it was really sensitive and really accurate.
You can get results how fast, Steve, with this test?
So we'll report results within 12 to 18 hours. We actually have our lab engineered and the workflow established to provide rapid results for all the tests we do. We've been doing this type of work for about 15 years now, molecular work for 15 years, and we've been around as a lab for about 35 years. But we've always focused on turnaround time. Our core patient cases come out of immunocompromised patients and critically ill patients, so we know that every hour matters. And so our goal is to provide results the same day we get the sample. We get samples at all hours of the day and night, and our lab just basically moves through these steps really 24 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you a 24/7 operation?
Well, not quite seven. We do have lab staff on Sunday. We tend to not get samples on Sunday because that is not a FedEx or a commercial courier shipping day. Certainly, if we do get samples, we process them on Sunday. So we stay 24/6 in this current environment with the expected increase in samples that we'll be receiving. I'm sure we'll be at 7 days probably by the end of this week.
Can you tell us, Steve, how many samples you are testing per day now approximately? Because one of the things we keep hearing is people aren't getting tested. We need to be testing more than we are.
Right. Really, that's a really good point. So just for clarity, we started testing today. We had our first batch of samples show up today. It always starts relatively small. We received about 100 samples today, and we're gearing up. We've talked to a lot of our clients, and we're gearing up for 1,000 to 1,200 a day comfortably. We certainly can look at other measures if there is that demand out there to go well beyond that. But you raise a really good point. We're not testing enough at this point. It's really hard to know who's spreading the virus if we don't know who's infected with the virus, and that's the critical information that's been missing up to this point. But our lab and a lot of other labs have ramped up and answered the call, and so we think that the testing environment will be intense for quite a few months and maybe even longer, but we will be able to keep up with the demand through the hopefully the worst part of this epidemic.
Talk to us about accuracy. There was some talk with the first round of tests, not yours, but there was some talk about some tests that were out there that were giving false negatives. How confident are you that the results you're going to get are going to be as close to 100% accurate as you want them to be?
Yeah, so that's unfortunate. It does happen in laboratory testing. What happened with that event that you were referring to is they had a batch of reagents of the key ingredients for the test, if you will, go out that were mismade. And it wasn't picked up. So we focus a lot of attention and just as much as we possibly can on the quality control measures, the QC measures, as we call them. We run controls in every batch, multiple controls in every batch, and importantly, every sample has its own control built into it that we actually add, and then it's part of the overall result that we review before releasing to patients.
Hey Steve, just because of the way the news cycle has unfolded today, can you hang on for just a couple of minutes? We need to get to the news, but I know our listeners, and we have a lot more questions for you about the testing. That is Steve Kleiblocker, the Vice President of Research and Development for the company and Lee's Summit that began testing today. Tested about 100 samples today, and they expect that number to grow.
You can't touch this. Can't touch this. You can't touch this. Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to run and to hike me. It feels good.
Dan Parks with that Parks, John Grayson sitting in, and we're talking with Steve Kleiblocker about, he is with the company that does all of the testing, or some of the testing anyway, right here in town in Lee's Summit for coronavirus.
Now, I'm thinking one of the things Steve would say is, please do not show up here in Lee's Summit asking to be tested. That is not the way this works, correct, Steve?
Absolutely, yeah. It starts with a physician. It starts with the traditional healthcare system.
So you're saying you have the capacity to test many, many more samples than you have. Do you anticipate that number will go up, and if so, when?
So we think it will ramp pretty quickly. We've talked to a number of our clients that use us for other testing, and they're expecting to send us anywhere from a dozen to a few dozen to up to 100 from their facilities. And so when we add that together, it comes to a pretty big number. We work with about 200 healthcare facilities on a regular basis across the U.S., and there are, of course, many more out there that need testing in this current environment.
So you tested 100 today, and I'm guessing you don't want to give us a percentage of those that have come back positive, but can you generally tell us, for all of the people saying, well, there's only 4 cases here, can you generally tell us what is anticipated to happen once testing starts to ramp up?
Right. So there will be more cases identified. There's no two ways about it. A lot of people have this virus, and they may have some very mild signs. They may just think it's the run-of-the-mill cold. We know that some of those patients can be shedding this particular coronavirus, the new SARS coronavirus, and therefore they will be detected by these tests. There's really not much question in my mind that rate could go up to 2, 3, even 4%. It's hard to say. We don't really know right now, but if we use the other countries that have done a lot of testing in advance of the U.S., like South Korea, for example, and China, we know that it's a pretty significant number.
Well, Steve, given the fact that we were talking a little bit earlier about coronavirus and the drive-by testing that's going on in New Rochelle, the president referred to that when he was talking in his speech a little bit earlier from the Rose Garden. So when it comes to doing, to actually collecting the samples, is there anything that needs to be on site other than just a swab?
Right. No, that's really all that is required. These tests that we run in our lab, as well as many others, the sample is actually very stable. It's very robust. It can easily survive a trip across the country or across town to a testing facility. So, yeah, the idea, I think, in a lot of this thinking is that it does keep people out of the healthcare settings where the patients are really ill. So the last thing you want to do is expose somebody, say, with a heart condition or some pre-existing illness that would make them highly susceptible. So having the testing at distant sites, if you will, is certainly a good idea. At least it has some merit in terms of protecting the critically ill patients.
I hate to use the word rank, Steve, but I'm going to use the word because I don't know how else to say it. Do you have the capability, and who decides how to test which cases first? And let me tell you why I'm asking that. We know we have one death, say, in a nursing home facility. Does it not make sense that everyone that was in contact with that patient and that nursing facility get tested first? Or are you just going to test the samples as they come in?
Right. So we have a real focus on client service with our company, and for years we've always had a policy that if a sample is really critical, our clients know to give us a call. They'll provide the specific information, and we will put the absolute rush on that sample, and it's all handled, I guess, really by a person at that point. We have a team that's dedicated to do that. So our clients know how to work with us. We deal with a lot of life-threatening pathogens already. This is unfortunately yet another that we're helping out with. But I think that same system is going to work well. So if we have a sample that really does, you know, has a sense of urgency, we have a mechanism to address that.
And when we talk about what's going to happen from here on out, you're obviously expecting to get more samples, and eventually the floodgates are going to open. You're going to get a lot of them. How quickly can you continue to produce the reagent that's necessary to do the testing?
Yeah, so that's another great question. You guys are asking really good questions, but the supply chain will be tested in this environment, because the reagents we're using, a lot of labs are using, or at least they're using variations of those. We think, in speaking with our suppliers, that we can meet the needs of this epidemic. It does remain to be seen, and we watch our supplies and our reagents, and we're trying to order in advance without hoarding and creating additional problems for all of those who are trying to address this emergency. But it's going to be a challenge. There's no two ways about it. We think we're up for it, and we have confidence, and we have a lot of experience in doing this type of work. We worked through the 2009 flu epidemic. We worked through the Zika epidemic as it emerged into the U.S. And so this is not new in terms of what we're doing. I do think the scale is going to be a 2 or 3X of what we've experienced in the past, though. So that's where the challenge will come in.
Steve, tell me a little bit about the staff. Is it protocol to test staff that will be handling these specimens day in and day out? And if so, what does that look like?
Right. So we don't test the staff. We have a lot of what we call personal protective equipment, PPE, and standard routine measures that we take to protect ourselves from the samples. So think about it. We're already dealing with well-known viruses like HCV, hepatitis C virus, HIV, many others that you haven't heard of, that at least a household name would not be familiar, that are equally dangerous and deadly to our staff. So we have these measures in place. This virus is, while it is a very serious new virus, the infectivity is not dramatically different than viruses that we've worked with in the past. So our measures that we know have been highly effective for, as I said, well over a decade, going into 3 decades actually, we trust that following those and being vigilant with our personal protective equipment and our procedures will prevent the exposure of the staff. That said, we have a policy that if the staff do come down with fever, then they are instructed not to expose the rest of the team to their potential illness, just because it is such a critical time for our workflow.
Well, Steve, we know how busy you are. We appreciate the time more than you know. And as much as I would love to come tour your building, I don't want to come within 1,000 yards of it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the attention, and appreciate your effort to disseminate knowledge and information to the public, because that is really important that everybody knows what we're doing and how we're doing it, and has the right perspective on our efforts and the medical community as a whole.
Yeah, thanks. Well, without the information, we're all sunk. So thanks for making sure that we can get it to the people who need it. Steve, an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Was Steve Kleibacher, the Vice President of Research and Development for the company in Lee's Summit. And they are one of what I assume are many, many sites around the country, but one of the big ones here that will be actively testing for COVID-19 in that lab.
And unfortunately, we can all rest assured they're going to be busier than they want to be with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Be honest, if you worked there, would you be testing yourself like every 5 minutes?
Oh, heck yeah. Are you kidding? I mean, how
John,
do you keep
do
it
you
quiet,
have another
but still?
Swab up your nose? I mean, because 12 minutes ago, I saw you with a swab up your nose.
I had an itch. That's all it is. I had an itch up there. It was the only way I could get at it was with the swab.
I'll put it back.
Sam Stevie with a win.
This is why we don't work in science at all. Well, it's one of about a trillion reasons why we don't work in science.
Because we can't remain calm.
Yeah, well, I mean, hello, that would be number one. 576-7798, our thanks to Steve. That was fascinating. We will put that up on podcast here when we can. When we come back, I want to talk about spring break. I know a lot of you have questions. I've got a girlfriend right now stranded in Miami because the country where she was going said, thank you, but no. Going to have to have you sit out for 14 days if you're coming to South America.
And it seems like they're not the only ones saying it.
Yeah, we looked this up over the commercial break. And when we come back, we'll tell you which places are starting to say thanks, but no thanks. Straight ahead on Dana and Parks. And our thanks to John Grayson for sitting in today for Scott. We're back after this. Touch me, American woman.
You might be infected.
I'm starting to think I put too much thought into these songs.
Love it, Sam. Love it. Keep up the good work.
You kind of do. You kind of do, but it makes me happy in a really, really weird way.
Oh, dear. You know, it's so much news. Again, like you said, fire hose to the face. Every minute, every second we turn around, there's something new about this. And everybody's looking for a good... You know, a good piece of news from anywhere. And I know we're going to talk some about some of the places where this is starting to show up, most notably here in town. But there is a combatant that's being used that's not being talked about very much. And I saw this morning and was just fascinated by it. There are hospitals that are using these robots that are autonomous robots, go along. Okay. And all they do is shine light. But it's
like a robo vacuum,
kind of, yeah, like a Roomba, but like it's just Roomba. Shining light up and down the walls and on the equipment and everything else like that. Because it seems that there's a particular part of the spectrum called UVC. You know, the sunglasses and stuff, they all say UVB protected,
yeah,
you know, so that they don't let UVB light into your eyes. This is a UVC, and it apparently has an incredible propensity to just be, it's like firing machine guns at coronavirus.
Yeah.
But it doesn't affect people at all.
Through light.
Yes.
It's not going to blind me.
No. And it the skin, you know, the dead skin layer on the outside of your body,
yeah,
is well thick enough to make it just bounce right off of you. But for single cell organisms, it's not even a cell, actually. A virus isn't even a cell. But for tiny little microbes like that, it blasts them apart.
Which is what we need in every single nursing home in America.
This is why... the folks at Samsung announced today they're going to, for free, clean your phone for you. They're using UVC light to do it.
Really?
So you don't need to spray anything on your phone. You don't need to. All you need to do, and now you can, I guess, get a UVC bulb. They're expensive though. They're about $1,000 a piece. So I would just say let Samsung do it. You know, let the right. hospital do it. You don't need to go spending a grand on this thing.
We just did get a statement from Life Care Center of Kansas City. Everyone wants to know, this poor gentleman who passed away at the age of 70 did test positive for COVID-19 after it was a post-mortem test they did. After he died, they realized he had it. And they have released a specific timeline of this patient. And while I'm glad to see that, I have asked John, I understand there are privacy rights even in death, okay?
Sure.
Even in death, we have privacy rights. But when these cases come up, is it not prudent public health policy to say, and by the way, this guy worked at fill in the blank. And by the way, he went to Union Station on Saturday and then the Nelson on Sunday. And I'm not saying that this man was at either
place.
In
this case, he didn't.
He did not. Don't freak out. I love both places. But is it not public policy in everyone's regard to be able to say in some of these cases, you know, and they worked at Chuck E. Cheese or like whatever. Do you know what I mean? And I
so
think,
that we can say I
so
went there.
So we can
there.
Say I went there, yeah. Because how do you know you've been in contact if all of that information is kept under wraps? And what's interesting about the statement from the facility, and I'll just read it. They say, our heartfelt condolences go out. We have begun notifying our families, residents, and associates and staff who might have come into contact with this patient. They say privacy guidelines prevent sharing much, but here's what we can share. They say the 70-year-old man came to Life Care of Kansas City from Providence Healthcare February 25th, not the other way around. I'm going to repeat that. They say this 70-year-old man who died of COVID-19 came to the nursing home from Providence Healthcare on February 25th. So think about this. And we went through this with my grandma, John. You're in the hospital for whatever. You're not recovering well. They discharge you to a facility like this, okay? And then they go through the timeline. He went back to the hospital for an unrelated issue on March 7th, came back on March 10th. He was unresponsive in our facility. The patient did not exhibit signs or symptoms of respiratory illness when he went back to the hospital, and he was dead one day later.
So they're saying that happened on the 7th, and that's an important date because what we've been told is that generally the amount of time, the incubation period before you start showing symptoms is 5 days. And
so are they trying to say he didn't get it here?
Well, maybe, but if they say he went back to the hospital on that date, it could have been. I mean, the incubation period is 5 days, right, but that may be enough if you're in that state, because they said he had all kinds of health problems.
Right.
It may have happened in transit. It may have happened at the other facility. It may have happened at theirs. But that fact is, we don't know.
Which is why when the governor said last night, we are going to start immediately doing detective work and trying to trace back and figure out all of the people in contact with him.
Somebody call Sam Spade. Yeah, we need him.
You had better have a long sheet of paper, because if he was bouncing back and forth two or three times from a center to the hospital, the number of people potentially who could have come in contact with this is, and then the number of people they've been in contact with and they've been in contact with, and you start to see why this is spreading rapidly.
Yeah, it's a scary situation. And again, the number of tools that are out there. I mean, we just talked to the gentleman who's doing the testing here in town and talked about the UV light and everything else. The number of tools in the arsenal is growing by the day. Unfortunately, so are the number of cases. So it's a matter of when that tipping point is going to hit. As everybody keeps saying, we will get out in front of this. How long is that going to take? Nobody knows.
5767798. You are listening to Dana and Parks. Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.